Brought to you by Take Root Training. Talking Potheads is a panel podcast for budtenders, bringing together experts from around the cannabis industry to discuss the fundamentals of selling weed in a dispensary. Each week, we dive into another topic to help budtenders understand these products and empower them on the sales floor. Grab some weed and your favorite munchies, and let's talk pot.
Welcome to the Talking Potheads. We're the Chronic Gals. I'm Riley.
And I'm your host, Ashleen. Welcome everyone to the show. Today we're talking about the history of cannabis and why it's important for budtenders to know their history. In our budtender training course, Root Knowledge, A Budtender's Guide to Cannabis, we talk about how close of a relationship humanity has had with cannabis, both as an industrious building material and as a medicine for body and mind. It wasn't until the last century that cannabis became demonized with slanderous propaganda, which resulted in the war on drugs and the criminalization of this plant. It's important for budtenders to understand cannabis's role over the centuries so they can speak to customers about its traditional uses, put to rest any customers' worries, and correct the misinformation that has been pumped into our society for the last three generations or so. So let's get into it. Welcome to our guest, the host and creator of the Great Moments in Weed History podcast and a contributor to pop culture, David Bienenstock. Welcome, David.
Thanks. It's a pleasure to be here talking with you both.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. Can you tell us a little bit about how you got into the cannabis community and why you think weed history is so important that you decided to make a podcast about it?
Sure. Well, I got into the cannabis community behind a bowling alley on Route 22 in New Jersey when some people I met at that bowling alley smoked me out for the first time. But it became more of a job and a vocation and a passion. And well, it was always a passion, I guess. But my first job in cannabis was with High Times Magazine. My first legal job with cannabis was with High Times Magazine. This was a long time ago and a very different era of that company's history. So I'm very proud of the work that I did and the people that I worked with at that time, but just always draw the distinction that it is not affiliated with the current regime over there, nor am I. Along the way, I worked for High Times for quite a number of years, primarily writing about the politics and culture of cannabis. And then I was a co-creator on a show on Vice called Bon Appetit that was about cannabis and food. I also wrote a column for Vice called The Weed Eater about cannabis and food, but also wrote a lot of pieces for them about, the same thing, the politics and culture around cannabis. And most recently, I wrote a book called How to Smoke Pot Properly. Most recently, I am the host of the podcast Great Moments in Weed History, which is over 150 episodes over about 5 years. Everything from Willie Nelson smoked a joint on the roof of the White House to Maya Angelou has an incredible cannabis story that not many people know. And then, of course, people from weed culture like Dennis Perone and Brownie Mary. So really try to just look at the history of this plant over a long period of time, thousands of years, and from all these different angles.
That's awesome. And I've listened to a couple episodes of the Great Moments in Weed History. And honestly, it's kind of crazy, like hearing you talk and hearing you, like seeing you, because I've only heard your voice on the podcast. So I feel like I'm listening. I have to remind myself that I'm not listening to a podcast. I am conducting a podcast. So let's just jump right in. Why, in your opinion, would a budtender need to know the history of cannabis?
I mean, I think, in the day-to-day functions, you could probably be an effective bud tender in terms of making product recommendations, keeping the shelves stocked. I would say the sort of level one functions of a bud tender You know, you really may not need to know the history, but that's a very thin understanding of the plant and the culture around it. So, you know, as one example, the whole history of prohibition and how that might affect your job as a budtender, people are going to come into your shop who have been made to feel very stigmatized over this plant, who have maybe been criminalized themselves over this plant, been arrested, had people in their lives who've been arrested, who have felt marginalized from the whole idea of cannabis because of messages they may have gotten from parents, school, criminal justice system, from their own doctors. That shit runs deep, you know? And so you should, of course, be trying to make a very welcoming environment for people. But I think having that in mind as you deal with somebody who might be coming in to buy cannabis legally for the first time. Also, you may be dealing with somebody who's never had cannabis, and really a lot of those people are going to be coming in the door for medicinal reasons, but they're still going to be bringing that stigma with them. Something prevented them from trying cannabis this whole time. So that right off the bat, I think on the flip side of that, if this is new to you culturally, cannabis, maybe you've had your own, you know, obviously you can work in a dispensary and do a good job and not consume cannabis yourself. I wouldn't recommend it, but it's certainly fine. But to understand the culture around this plant is just going to help you. Lots of other people are going to come in who are psyched. This is you know, probably the one shopping experience in their lives. They, you know, other than the price sometimes, depending where you are, that people look forward to. And if you can engage with people, not in a false way or a showy way, but just have an understanding of cannabis culture and the history of it, you're going to be able to connect with the people who come in the door. And then I just really think beyond that, you know, this isn't like working at the Gap. You know, people really suffered for this plant. People really fought to create the legal market that you are being employed by, if nothing else. And I'm assuming most people who care enough to listen to your show do have a connection to the plant. And so you're a special ambassador to the plant, and whatever you might not know up until this moment, that's fine. But if you're going to be in that position, and then the good news is it's a really fascinating history and a really uplifting history because it is a history of resistance to authority when authority is abusing the rights of the people, and the people actually, and this is still an ongoing process, but winning. So, you know, it's a history. You know, the show is called Great Moments in Weed History for a reason. I've written hundreds of articles about the most egregious abuses of power. People having their doors kicked down in the middle of the night, being arrested, being shot over a clearly medicinal plant, a plant with a very low abuse around its use. You know, just you know, I'm not, I don't need to preach to the choir as far as that goes, but the larger point being, like, I picked great moments in weed history because there are still so many stories about overcoming that kind of oppression, of that kind of targeting of people of color, people with less money. Younger people are disproportionately targeted by the war on drugs. And also all of our incredible, like, an episode about how many jazz songs in the 1920s and 30s were written about weed, and how important cannabis was to that culture, and just reframing for people who might have been taught or led to believe, oh, you know, weed smoking in America started with a bunch of hippies in the 60s. No, I could play 25 songs for you about weed from the 20s and 30s. And then, oh, well, maybe that's the beginning. No, we have an episode about cannabis in the ancient world that shows that cannabis residue, hashish residue, cannabis concentrates, if you will, are found at some of the oldest and most sacred religious sites in the Judeo-Christian tradition. We have an episode about cannabis in the Islamic world, including the early Islamic world. We have an entire episode about the use of cannabis and references to cannabis in the Hindu faith. We just had an episode about ancient China and a goddess called Magu. So, you know, this history is very old, very central to humanity, very fascinating. There's lots of incredible characters and people that you will meet, struggles against injustice. And ultimately, you know, we are at this moment when, at least on this one issue, there's clear progress. And, you know, the legal market is not everything we would like it to be, certainly not everything I would like it to be. But the fact is, in states that have legalized, those arrests are going away, you know, by and large. And people who need this plant medicinally have safe and legal access to it. And everything else is what we still have to work on, but never lose sight of those two important things, the most important things, not to disrupt people's lives and entire communities because they choose a safe, effective medicine or an alternative to alcohol or just want to get high. Mm-hmm. End of story. And that, you know, if you've had anyone in your life or in yourself, in your own life, have benefited from cannabis as a medicine, you know, just imagine how many people, as one example, went through chemotherapy without at least trying cannabis to deal with the side effects of that. And that is, to me, people should be held to account for that, like in terms of human suffering. And that's just one medicinal use. The first medicinal use that was ever acknowledged by the government, the first ever ability to prescribe Marinol, which is just THC, medicinally, was for the side effects of chemotherapy. And you might ask, well, how did that happen? Well, we have an episode about Dr. Lester Grinspoon, who was a leading researcher. He was worked at Harvard Medical School. He decided that his best friend, Carl Sagan, smoked too much weed. So he wanted to convince Carl Sagan to stop smoking weed. He went to the library and realized this is all just bullshit. It's just propaganda. Like, this entire underpinning of and he went, well, sorry, Carl, you know, I guess I was wrong. But he also wrote a whole book about it called Marijuana Reconsidered in 1971. A few years later, his own son had pediatric cancer, and he and his wife really decided to give him weed. They knew it worked. They saw what he was going through simply with chemotherapy. He was able to bring in other doctors from Harvard Medical School and elsewhere, and in essence, show them the night and day with his own son. And they were unable, in essence, to look him in the face. And that led directly to the first studies of THC. And the first acknowledgement in any of the medical literature in the modern era that it is an effective medicine. And so, you know, I guess part of the thing is, like, in your question, which I have taken a long time to answer, is I think sometimes people just don't understand why history might be interesting to them in general. And I understand that. And I would just say, history is like all the best stories that ever happened that are also true being sifted by people to present them to you. And that's what I try to do with the show.
I think that's amazing. And when we were writing our bartender training course, we really had multiple conversations about whether the history was something that needed to be included, because of kind of what you said at the beginning, is this something that a bartender really needs to know in order to do their job well? And after talking about it more and more, and also, you know, it's the things that you brought up. The answer is clearly yes. If a bartender doesn't understand the cultural and historical implications of the industry that they're working in, they do not have a full understanding of what's going on. And how can they correct that misinformation and help these, you know, customers who are scared and nervous to walk into a dispensary? How can they effectively help them if they don't understand the big picture? So I think that the history is incredibly important, and I'm really grateful that you have a podcast like yours that's, you know, really examining all of these little pieces. So,
and all the great moments, like you said, and it is important to highlight all the great moments as well as all the negative moments, because like we learn from all the negative things too, but we do learn from the hope and the greatness that comes from this plant, because there is a lot of great hope that comes from it. A lot of great relief too. So yeah. Yay for history.
Yeah, yay for history. So let's take it back down the timeline to ancient history. You've already brought up several different places where cannabis has appeared. Let's talk about ancient China, since you just had that episode. Can you tell us a little bit about, you know, how cannabis was found and used then there?
Yes. So that was an episode with Christina Wong and Wendy Zhang, who are two chefs, content creators, Asian American women in the cannabis world. And they have been, so I want to definitely, you know, they've been researching this. They threw events, sort of honoring this story of Magu, and came to me. And that's really, you know, one of the most fun things about doing this show is when I get to talk to people about their stories, or when people come to me and say, hey, did you ever hear about this story? And this was obviously just a great one. And this is going back, I think 2600 BC, don't completely quote me on that. And there are all of these references to a goddess named Magu, who is very associated with the hemp plant, and who is said to have brewed the elixir of life. So hemp plus elixir of life, you know, I should say, of course, the hemp plant and the cannabis plant are both the cannabis plant. So they're selectively bred for different reasons, but they're the same plant. And, you know, one of the things that we got into in the issue, in the episode, is that this history has been suppressed in China, the same as it has been suppressed in the United States. You know, one of the things we really came to talk about in that episode is that every type of authority seems to want to suppress this plant, because you have a communist government in China. Whether it's really communism or not is probably a debate for a different podcast. You have authoritarian regimes, you have dictators, you have supposed democracies. You have all of these seemingly different ideological bents trying to suppress this plant. And I think it's because there's something in cannabis inherently that makes you question authority. And almost without exception, authority is abused. And so they don't want you to question it. Long way to say, there is, they're working on a bit of a historical recovery project when it comes to Magu, Christina and Wendy, because, you know, they're working off mentions in texts and depictions in art, and trying to piece together a story that was purposely written out of history. So it's really fascinating and empowering to see them do that. And, you know, even since the episode, they've said, oh, a few people reached out to us who had, you know, hey, did you see, have you ever seen this book, et cetera. So and that's another thing I would just stress, is like, history is a living, ongoing process that you can be a part of. And just before I forget to mention it in another context, I would encourage anyone who is a bud tender, please try to start a compassion program where you work. Please try to create a path. I understand that you don't own the dispensary and that depending on the kind of place you work at, maybe they already do it. Maybe they are completely, you know, I would say if you work at a place that thinks that's a terrible idea and gets mad at you for suggesting it, you should start looking for another place to work because fuck them. You know, yeah.
Can you just briefly define what a compassion program is for anyone who doesn't know?
Sure. Broadly, it is the realization that people who need the plant medicinally and cannot afford it at the prices that it is legally available still have a basic human right to access the plant. And in an ideal world, we would all have healthcare, and healthcare would include this incredibly medicinal and very low cost medicine. Very safe and effective and low cost medicine. If you take the taxes and the sort of red tape, and that doesn't mean there shouldn't be a legal system. I'm just saying you can grow an unbelievable amount of incredibly safe and effective medicine right in your own backyard. And so for us to have a legal system in place where for-profit businesses are making money off of this plant, and yet somebody who has cancer or Parkinson's disease or any number of medicinal conditions and just does not have the money to afford cannabis at retail prices should go without is completely unacceptable. And, you know, we can point a lot of fingers, but at the end of the day, if you are a retail outlet selling this plant every single day in a community, you need to take care of that community. And you as a bud tender, as I said, recognizing that you do not own the dispensary, but this is something that you can do. And I will tell you this, if you want to talk to the boss and you know, you just want to make them say, this is going to make us look good. This is going to make us look good to local officials. This is going to make us look good to local community. And if that's what gets them to do it, great. If bringing in some people who are in that position, great. But ultimately, that's something that a dispensary should be doing just of their own volition. In certain states, there are statewide compassion programs that, you know, will allow dispensaries to, in essence, not pay all the taxes on cannabis that they're providing as part of their compassion program. So that really varies state to state, but it's something you can research in the state and the community even where you live. And, you know, I just will guarantee you, if you're going to be standing in that store every day selling weed, and in your heart, you know that you helped other people access it. And when those people come in to access those, the people in the compassion program come in to access that medicine, you'll feel really good about it. It's like, this plant is so powerful medicinally and so safe and so life-changing for people that by simply helping one person access it, gosh, you can feel so good about it. And it's, you don't have to do anything. You know what I mean? You don't have to do anything hard. I wouldn't want to let this opportunity go by without making that pitch.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that because, I mean, we started Take Root because we wanted to disrupt the industry. And I think having compassion projects is totally in line with like the vibe of the plant and how, like you said, it is medicine. This is, to me anyway, like cannabis culture is community. It's giving back to, you know, your friends and your loved ones and helping those in need. And it's not about the red tape, it's not about the profits, not about all of these things that these big wigs are creating this industry to be. And I really appreciate you saying that because
it's easy to lay down and accept the industry for what it is and the money that it could become, but it's harder to create something like totally industry changing, like a compassion project, you know. And I think we need to infuse the industry with more love and gratitude and help and community that there really isn't that right now. Mm-hmm. So appreciate you saying that.
Oh, thank you. And just getting back to the history, you know, I'm not plugging my show any more than a little. Just we go and listen to our episodes about Brownie Mary, about Dennis Perone, about the organization WHAM, about the organization Sweetleaf, people who went to prison, people who were shot by the police. Dennis Perone was shot by the police. Brownie Mary, a little old lady, was arrested 3 times. For giving free cannabis to AIDS patients, for giving free cannabis to cancer patients, what people went through. And then I think, you know, you will just feel compelled of your own volition to try to push things in that direction as well.
And part of the thing, going back to the history, is that the entire human history with cannabis is it has been this medical, this wellness drug. I hate that word drug. That's not the right word. This wellness, you know, thing to that actually helps people's all of these different ailments. You also mentioned the Ottoman Empire. Islam, the Islamic Empire. Thank you. I know that they were one of the first, maybe not one of the first, but they were a very prominent culture to use cannabis less, I don't want to say less medicinally, but more for the mind, more for the high. Did you learn anything about that you can share?
Yeah, well, I had a professor of Islamic studies on as my guest. So that's the other thing with the podcast is, it's an opportunity to learn from people. It's an opportunity to, you know, the shows that I get the most excited about are when I'm furthest from what I tend to know about. And so, you know, we talked, and he's somebody who had studied hashish in essence as a trade product, as well as a part of the spiritual life. And so you can really see, you know, when you go back to ancient history, or even, you know, the history of, you know, 1000 AD, there's less to go on. You know, yeah. Think about how much more documented the life of a 10-year-old is now than a 10-year-old 40 years ago. Well, we're going back, you know, 1,000 years. So, but, you know, it is woven into the fabric of life. And another thing to really keep in mind, and you alluded to, like, prohibition is the anomaly. The idea that this plant is dangerous is made up, and largely in the last 100 years, although you see it flare up in other times and other places. And so, yeah, I found that episode completely fascinating. And I don't want to speak outside of my expertise and try to tell that story. I would just say to people, go listen to somebody who's really studied this, who grew up in the Islamic world, who is a professor of Islamic studies, and who, you know, I'll say seemed to like cannabis too. So we got along very well.
Totally. So cannabis, like, beyond the spiritual stuff, we also know that cannabis has been super useful for things like textiles and rope and
paper.
Can you speak to a little bit, maybe moving forward in history, how cannabis was actually even part of the beginning of our country, how hemp has, like, really been tied into society?
Yeah, absolutely. I would say, again, looking at history, you have everything from the original copy of the Declaration of Independence being written on hemp paper, quotes from the founding fathers, obviously the plant, the land that is currently known as the United States, long pre-existed the idea of the United States, and cannabis was a part of that history as well. I've had an episode of the show just sort of talking about what the future of hemp might be now that all of these restrictions on it are again in tandem with intoxicating cannabis, or getting high cannabis. We're seeing this flourishing of hemp, and I would say the person who really brought this whole hidden history of hemp to light was the author Jack Herer. And we have an episode about him and how he dug up in a time before the internet, in a time of really heavy prohibition and propaganda against the plant, this whole alternative history of hemp, for textiles, for rope, for food, for kinds of fuel that could be made from hemp. So, that's almost this parallel history. It's just so quite amazing that this same plant, as I said before, there, different selective breeding of cannabis that gives us hemp or gives us OG Kush, but they're all cannabis, could be so incredibly useful in so many ways. I mean, it's just the impression that you have to come away with if you study the history of cannabis is, one, pretty fucking great plant. Like, no way around it, It will get your aunt through chemo. It will make ice cream taste better. It will either enhance or help you survive a 38-minute Grateful Dead jam. Like, there's a lot to like. Oh, by the way, it's also one of the most promising natural building materials. It is, has all of these industrial uses, and as we face a lot of ecological problems on the planet, offers us an alternative path versus an all-out trillion dollar war that never worked and was completely racist and oppressive for 100 years against this plant. I don't know how much this relates to being a bud tender, but that's the world we all live in. And I would just say, look at every other aspect of the world and question that authority, because on the thing that I know the most about, that's the reality of it. And I'm not a conspiracy person, and I'm not a you don't need a conspiracy. It was right out in the open. There was a time in this country when almost 850,000 people in the United States alone in a single year were getting arrested for cannabis. Thankfully, that number is down below 300,000 a year. That's still bananas. That's still, and it's still a human rights abuse that goes on every single day. The people, and I'm not talking about anybody specific, the people in charge and the institutions that hold power do not have people's best interests at heart. Individual people and individual institutions and people within those institutions do. And it's just to say that we need to demand better. I always just think cannabis and cannabis history, especially, thankfully we are having people coming into our culture now who never really experienced prohibition, maybe, certainly not the same way someone growing up under the threat of arrest all the time did. That's great, but all the more reason to, and when you see these big corporate interests coming into cannabis, they want to erase the real history because it doesn't serve them. They weren't a part of changing things for the better. And in essence, at least passively and often actively, they were a part of maintaining that status quo. you know, what money stood for, what the corporate world stood for was, this is fine. We're certainly not going to do anything about it. But once people took all the risks of speaking up, of undermining the system of prohibition, even if you were a grower or a dealer, you know, without people breaking the law never would have changed. There would have been, no one would have, if the government outlawed kale, we would have just gone without kale. It's not that big of a deal. There's spinach.
Yeah.
Because people care so much about this plant, because this plant is so beneficial, people were willing to risk arrest. I don't think anyone willingly went to prison, but people did in mass numbers. This was a massive campaign of civil disobedience. And it's an inspiring history if you think we need a lot more of that, if you think we need to question authority a lot more, if you think we need to change the inequalities in the world. But if you just want to sell Coke, Pepsi, Marlboro Lights, and corporate weed, that history is not only not serving you, it's showing that you were on the wrong side of that history and still think that you should be able to profit off of it. And so I would say that's another reason it's inherent on all of us to keep this history in the front of people's minds.
I read a really great book years ago now, Chasing the Scream by Johan Hari. And that was one of the first ones that blew my mind about this specific topic. About, he goes into Harry Anslinger and how the war on the original prohibition, I think the war on drugs, does that technically speak more to Reagan?
Yeah.
Right? So like the original prohibition also served the paper industries and the pharmaceutical industries and all of these, and oil, yeah, all of these corporations that just wanted to make money. And hemp, here was hemp, this thing that was, like we've said, so cheap to produce, so versatile, that could wipe out all of these different places. And so I just wanted to shout out that book for anybody who wants to do more reading. It's an excellent one.
Yeah, absolutely. And we have an episode of the podcast about Harry Anslinger, for sort of, although they didn't use the term then, kind of the first drug czar in America, mm-hmm. somebody who really, if you could put the criminalization of cannabis in the United States on one person, it would be him. But of course, it would have been someone else. I think that's the other thing, like, that history really teaches us is it's really about what the people in power want versus what the people want. Very often. So there would have been a different Harry Anslinger if it wasn't him, but you know, he was a terrible Harry Anslinger. you know, he targeted the jazz musicians of that era, you know, you know, this is really always a cultural issue as well that gets into the racism, that gets into just the idea of suppressing anything that doesn't derive from the top-down power structure, like jazz music. They simply found jazz music in and of itself threatening because it was largely being made by people of color, because it didn't come out of the musical institutions of the era it came, and yet it shone this incredible light. You could not deny the musicianship of it. You could not deny that these were incredible composers. I mean, you could, but you look like an idiot. People did. And so they tried to just take this community of weed smoking jazz musicians. You know, Harry Anslinger at one point had a plan for mass arrests of jazz musicians. So yeah, fuck that guy.
Fuck that guy.
And I think it's cool that like some of the DARE wording was like, weed is a gateway drug or whatever. And it's like not really a gateway to other drugs. It's a gateway to like
real history and like questioning authority, like you said, and really questioning why we can't do things like the easy way. Because if we were able to just access this plant in all the ways that we can access it, a lot of problems would get solved. A lot of issues, like I think when you mentioned like hempcrete as an industrial housing built or building material, it can withstand fire. And the amount of fires that we're having right now in the world, it's only going to be a good thing once more hemp, we can grow more hemp, so we can make more hempcrete, so we can build more houses. And it just, there's like too many good things that outweigh the negatives, the zero things on the negative list. And I just, yeah, I don't know where I was going with that other than like the gateway to just learning about so many other things that you don't really get to learn about when you're learning like
from DARE
or the US history yeah. or college or whatever.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think for a lot of people, you know, I referenced earlier, when you look at arrest rates, young people are disproportionately targeted in the war on drugs and the war on cannabis. One of the biggest reasons for that is that a lot of young people just don't have a safe private residence where they can smoke weed. And the biggest factor in getting arrested is where you live, the color of your skin, and your ability to hide what you're doing in a place where there's prohibition. And so for younger people, you're in a park, don't smoke weed while you're driving, but you're in a car, you're doing these things to, you know, do the best job you, anyway, all to say, getting arrested can almost be a rite of passage, depending, you know, as a younger person. And as you mentioned, the gateway, like what you need to do to take away from that experience, you know, so many of the most effective cannabis activists that I've talked to, and I've talked to a lot of them, when did you start pushing back against this in an organized way? I got arrested, my brother got arrested, etc. They, with all of these arrests, as we said, they were creating their own destruction. They were sowing the seeds of their own destruction, because those people that got arrested and got really mad about it, some percentage of them decided to do something about it, and collectively we did. That doesn't mean that you have to have been arrested to be an activist. It's just, and what you need to take away from that experience in your own life is power is abused. And then if you can just look with compassion at everyone else in society, I just don't understand how people see these abuses of authority against people who are marginalized in all of these different ways and decide to side with the oppressor. And depending on how you grew up culturally, maybe you grew up with money, maybe you are an affluent white young person who has not experienced institutional racism, or worried about where your family's next meal is coming from, or had some boss at a job treat you like shit because they know that you don't have the option to quit, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, your buddy Luke from the, I'm not trying to be a dick, from the lacrosse team or whatever gets busted for weed. Oh my God, man, so fucking unfair. Yeah, you're absolutely fucking right. You are in solidarity with everyone who has ever been arrested for weed, but try to look 10 feet past your own face and you're gonna be pretty surprised by how unfair it is for everyone else in addition to yourself in all of these myriad ways. And so, you know, at the end of the day, understanding cannabis history really comes with that understanding, that wider understanding of like we need to be in solidarity, you know, as weed people with everyone else who is facing this unfair treatment. You know, I sometimes hesitate to use the word oppression that we face or have faced in different places and still do, many US states all over the world. But at the end of the day, when the government is arresting people in mass, when the government is forcibly entering people's homes in the middle of the night, surveilling people as they drive around in their cars, threatening them with prison, putting them in prison, putting them through the criminal justice system, taking people's children away into protective custody, those are oppressive acts by the government. The war on drugs is a dry run for fascism. So best we fight it now. You know, there's no reason to let it get any worse. There's also really fun stories like Willie Nelson got smoked the joint on the roof of the White House.
Well, one thing that really strikes me about all of this is that, like, despite prohibition, despite criminalization, despite this targeted attack, the cannabis community has done some really incredible things to further what we can do with the plant, all on the black market. People have saved seeds, and we've been able to, like, keep landrace strains going because people have been able to save the seeds. We've been able to come up with new ways of making concentrates and extracts. You know, BHO happened because of the legacy industry. And then we've also spoken of, like, the building materials and all of these other things that are coming out of this prohibition. And so now that a lot of that is starting to be raised, not all of it, what do you kind of see for the next steps in cannabis, for the future, for more innovation?
Yeah, absolutely. And some of the most fun episodes of the show are, like, we traced the history of the strains ChemDog and OG Kush and Sour Diesel. I talked to a guy, Bob Snodgrass, who was really the first art glass blower to make pipes and has a whole incredible history on the Grateful Dead tour, et cetera, but really pioneered this whole art movement. And then, of course, all kinds of advancements in terms of the industry. But really, if you are breeding a new kind of cannabis, that's so incredible of a gift to give the world. And I think the future is, one, of course, just like making sure that everyone is a part of this. And that's both geographically and, community by community, that cannabis is open and accessible to everyone. I think, frankly, the future of the plant itself is going to be a push-pull between the traditional community and agribusiness. Mm-hmm. And I did a series of articles for a website called Leafly about attempts to, in essence, take out patents on the cannabis plant. These are what are called utility patents. So it's not so much patenting a single strain as saying any cannabis that has these aspects, I now have a patent on it. And so I would just say to people who, have a deep interest in that, or to whom that sounds very frightening, or people who are breeding the plant now are really interested in, a lot of bud tenders, of course, are going to be, one of the major things you're going to get asked about is what strains. So understand how plants are bred, understand what a strain really is, understand how these different varietals are really hybrids of landrace strains that are indigenous all over the world. It'll just expand your appreciation of cannabis. It will make you much better Especially one of your biggest functions should be cutting through a lot of bullshit for people if you really want to be a good conduit in the retail environment, help people understand. Here's one thing I would tell people, and it's unfortunate because a lot of places you can't smell the cannabis in the retail environment, but that's more than a name or anything else. You know, one, if you know where it was grown and who grew it, that's always the best information to go on, but that's not always available, or what you're being told might not even really be true. Cannabis that smells really good to you, and particularly if you know what good cannabis smells like, that's the cannabis for you. Your nose is an unbelievably complex instrument for determining what you should put in your own human body. It's not foolproof, okay? As all the poisonings in 18th century novels tell us. But that's a great place to start. And then I would say, yeah, look into cannabis patents. If you Google cannabis patents Leafly and my last name, Bean and Stock, this article will come up. It's a series of articles, and you know, it's a lot to get into, you know, here, but that's to me the big issue coming up in terms of the plant itself. Do we want a Monsanto like situation with cannabis?
Right.
I don't.
Riley's shaking her head.
No, thank you.
Awesome. Okay, so I think that's a really good place to conclude our conversation today. So just to kind of wrap it up with the main takeaways. A budtender really needs to know about their cannabis history so that they understand their place in the grand scheme of the industry, and so that they can help correct misinformation, which is the biggest problem that came out of the prohibition, is there's so much incorrect information out there. So with that, David, do you have any final thoughts for us tonight?
Smoke them if you got them. And yeah, please check out Great Moments in Weed History. And if you enjoy the show, drop me a line. I'd love to hear from you. And thank you for the work that you're doing. And, you know, much appreciation. Anybody, you know, if you're not only a budtender, but you are listening to a program like this and trying to be the best budtender that you can be, I just want you to know that's very much appreciated. And that's really important work. And you can be the interface for somebody to access this plant in the best possible way. And if you could do that and start that compassion program where you work.
Love that. And lastly, where can we find you on the internet?
Hopefully out walking my dog and not on the internet. No. I would say, you know, you can find me through my name, but go to Great Moments in Weed History. That's the you don't want to hang out. I put on a good show and I'm a boring person in real life. So check out the show.
That'll be a good podcast to put on after you listen to this podcast.
Yeah.
So you get all the history. Well, thank you so much for being here. This was awesome. And listeners, please stay tuned for the Budtender Buzz Line.
Introducing the Cool Smoke two-piece smoking kit. Crafted with the finest ebony or pear wood, this sleek and innovative smoking pipe offers a sophisticated experience. Each kit includes one ebony and one pear wood two-piece pipe, 8 replacement activated charcoal filters, a metal cleaning poker with wood sheath, a pipe cleaner, and cleaning solvent. This statement piece makes a perfect gift choice for your favorite stoner. Secure your own Cool Smoke two-piece smoking kit, available now on Amazon.
So you want to be a budtender? Ditch the beginner blues and get ready to bloom into the cannabis connoisseur you were meant to be. Toss those dusty textbooks and cryptic forums. Root Knowledge, a budtender's guide to cannabis, is your personal cannabis professor. An online course packed with bite-sized lessons, sharp quizzes, and case studies that'll have you recommending products like a pro. Master the science, crush customer service and unlock the secrets of every product on the shelf. You'll be a Canna expert, empowering customers and leaving them high on life. Enroll in Root Knowledge today and plant the seeds of your cannabis industry success. Visit takeroottraining.com to sign up today.
Thank you so much to David for joining us on episode 2 of Talking Potheads. We're here for the Budtender Buzzline. Gonna smoke a little weed. And yeah, that's what we're gonna do.
Okay. Sorry, got high looking at the weed.
Was there anything amazing that stood out to you about David's perspective or what he had to add to the conversation?
Yeah. You know, I just really like that he is such, he was like, I just love that he was promoting like the compassion projects. And I was listening to him say those things, and that would be a really hard project to, you know, put on.
To take on.
Yeah. But how it's so important. Weed is expensive, and is taxed weed is even more expensive. And
holla.
A lot of us use this plant as medicine, and we're not supposed to say that. Don't say that as a bud tender, but like that's what we're doing here.
Yeah.
And people do need this plant freely so we can be healthy.
Right.
You know?
Right.
The other point that really stands out was him talking about how this isn't just a job at the Gap. Mm-hmm. Like, people have lost their lives, have gone to jail for this plant, are still in jail currently for this plant. And being a bud tender is not just a retail job.
Totally, 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 totally.
And I think as bud tenders, you know that, but as people not in the industry, they don't understand, like the customers coming into your stores, they don't understand like the levity of your job. Mm-hmm. You know, like they think that you're just a Gap worker, but you're like so much more than that.
Right. Well, you know, I think that even some newer bud tenders do not understand the gravity of where the industry came from. Because I feel like at least here in Washington State, where we've been at this for 10 years now, the days of going to jail for having a dime bag in your pocket feel long gone. Mm-hmm. Although that is clearly not the case everywhere. So I think it's a good reminder, no matter what, to be like, yeah, you think you want to work in the cannabis industry. You think the easy way into that is by getting a job as a bartender. But there's a lot of weight that is carried by the mantle of budtender that people forget about. So,
and also, like, if you want to be the retail budtender, worker, person, dispensary, whatever, be that. Who cares? You know, mm-hmm. like, there is room for
the casual dispensary worker.
Dispensary worker who is just there to get paid, but then there's also room for the people who like want to educate the public,
who love cannabis
mm-hmm. and there's room for everybody. You know, there's room for everyone to eat here, but no matter what, you work in a weird industry.
Yeah.
Like,
with a wild history.
And even now, it's not a safe job.
Right.
You know, like, you have to be absolutely on your P's and Q's. Like, oh, it's fun selling weed. But I think,
well, not only that, I think you're talking about like in the compliance side of it, or not saying it's medicine or whatever. Yeah. But even like people are getting held up at dispensaries, and people are getting shot at dispensaries. And it's not a safe job.
No.
And yet you're just paid to be, you know, the minimum wage entry level worker. Exactly. It's just, it's wild.
It is wild. So that's why we're here anyway, to advocate for your job and your career, because it is important that you get paid for your work
and your knowledge and your training
and the expertise that you have. And so, yeah, we're here to advocate for you guys, but also advocate for yourselves.
That's right.
Anyway, we got off on a tangent.
Thank you, David.
Thank you, David. It was really fun listening to him.
Oh, he has so many great stories.
He has so many great
stories. Go check out his podcast, because if you really want to hear the stories, listen to his podcast.
Yeah, I think we're going to have links to many of them. Or maybe we'll just link the whole podcast. But yeah. There are quite a few mentioned that I'm going to go back and listen to.
Yeah, for sure.
They're super interesting. Okay, Budtender Buzzline.
Okay, our first Budtender Buzzline comes to us as a text. So we're going to read this one out today. A man came into the dispo yesterday and was in literal tears because he had tried gummies for the first time at 60. I had to stop myself from crying. He explained that he had been in 3 car accidents over the course of his life and couldn't easily get out of a chair or turn his head due to neck issues. He said edibles have changed his life and he can't remember the last time he felt this good. Then he wiped his eyes and bought more edibles. Some days are really hard, but this was a good reminder of why I work in cannabis.
That's a nice juxtaposition to the fucking shit we were just talking about.
Totally. Totally.
So there are wins.
Of course there are wins. Because, I mean, this is why the budtenders continue, is because it's why I did it for so long. It's because you run into customers where you see that from the first day you help them to the 60th day you help them, you see that there's like a true difference, whether they're looking for help with their neck pain or to sleep or to get off opioids. Like, there's a million reasons that people are using cannabis. And when you are a budtender, you get to walk along that journey with people. And it's a really special place to be.
It really is. Thank you to our anonymous submitter for submitting that really nice story, because I think that might be the only nice story we have.
Yeah, the other ones get a little crazy.
Yeah, they do. So stay tuned for the rest of the Budtender Buzzlines and the rest of this Talking Podheads season.
Make sure you guys join our email list, because we are doing freebies with every single episode. If you're on our email list, we'll get them sent straight to your inbox. You can sign up in the show notes below. This one for episode 2 is about the history of cannabis. So make sure you sign up for the newsletter and it'll get sent straight to you.
And as a gift for listening to the whole episode, you get a coupon code to Root Knowledge, a Budtender's Guide to Cannabis. And the coupon code is for $150 off the course, which is a grand deal.
So good.
The coupon code is Potheads 2024. That's Potheads 2024, all one word. And go to takeroottraining.com and cash in your coupon for Root Knowledge, a Budtender's Guide to Cannabis.
Hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
Make sure you rate, review, and subscribe to this podcast for tons more cannabis info coming your way.
All right, Potheads, keep learning
and keep growing.
Bye.